Hey, good morning. So this is Alex Chu, editor of ENT Today, and here we are with Lamont Jones. Dr. Jones is the recent winner of the George Adams Young Faculty Award, which is an award given out by the middle section of the Trilogical Society. And it's really a mid-level career award to reward those who really are future leaders in our specialty, have done a wonderful job in their academic careers, and which have tremendous potential as they move forward. So congratulations, Lamont, on your award, and great to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks, Alex, for inviting me here to talk today.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about where you grew up, where you did training, and where you are now.
Yes. So I'm a native Detroiter. So I grew up in Detroit. I did my undergrad at Xavier University in Louisiana. I did my medical school and residency training at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I did a craniofacial reconstructive fellowship in SUNY Upstate in Syracuse, and I am currently in my soon-to-be 10th year on staff at Henry Ford Health System at the hospital in the Department of Otolaryngology in Detroit.
And tell me more about your first careers. Has this been your only job, or have you gone to different jobs? And if I don't mind asking you, what made you want to go to Henry Ford?
Well, as far as jobs after high school and college, this is my first job. As far as working at Henry Ford, I had plans on coming back to Detroit after finishing. I still have a lot of family and friends in the area. I saw Detroit as a opportunity. At the time, Detroit was making a slow ascend back to some of its former glory days. So I chose Henry Ford because I felt like it gave me sort of what I was looking for. There's a lot of opportunity. At Henry Ford, I specifically wanted to do cleft lip and palate surgery. And at the time, the cleft lip and craniofacial clinic had disbanded. So there was an opportunity to come and restart that. Henry Ford has a good mix of sort of community-based clinical operation and a probably underappreciated research infrastructure, and so I thought it would, give me sort of what I was looking for as I started my career journey.
So you brought up some really good points that comes up a lot, and I think it comes up a lot with residents who are looking for jobs. So there are a lot of residents who know they want to go back to a certain area. Maybe they grew up in Detroit or they grew up in Houston and they want to go back to that area. How did you set yourself up for that job? Did you do some prep legwork beforehand? Did you make connections? How did you, because you knew you were geographically locked, so to speak, or you had a geographic location in mind. How did you prepare yourself for that?
At Henry Ford, I knew one faculty member that was there. He did his fellowship at Michigan when I was a third year resident. We sort of kept in touch a little bit. So I kind of had an idea of what Henry Ford was like. I knew in Detroit that I sort of knew the climate for otolaryngology in the area. And I knew that there were a couple opportunities. Knowing in the beginning that that there was the need help me sort of really shape the plan to come back. But I will say, a lot of people when they finish, they probably they look at geographical areas, they look at different institutions or opportunities to practice. And they want to find out whether or not the department is strong and what they are interested in, and maybe there's some senior members that could act as mentors. I think for me, the biggest thing was just that I knew the opportunity was there. And so, you know, I came with the mindset that I would use the network that I had created over the years to help support me in the location that I had chosen.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. That network developed over years, right? You never burn bridges. You keep that network alive because you never know when it's going to help you. The other interesting thing I heard about what you said earlier was the cleft lip practice, cleft palate practice. And that's an interesting practice, right? So that's another tough thing to kind of break into. What was your game plan in breaking into that practice?
Well, so first, what was really essential was that there was an opportunity and a need. You know, Henry Ford set up its integrated healthcare delivery system. There is a health insurance plan. So there's a captive audience that usually has to choose Henry Ford first. And so when I knew that there was an opportunity, the chair of the department, Captain Ron Churchill, was very supportive from the beginning. So my game plan when I went in was to be as collaborative as possible. And so she had already identified the key stakeholders, and I had some of the pre-meetings before I got started. And I think that, you know, some of the general principles are important and common, you know, no matter what situation that you find yourself in. When you're starting off, you want to be, you know, available, and you want to obviously, you have to have the skill set to produce. I think those were some important factors that helped me be successful in the beginning.
So now you are 10 years. When you started, did you have a five-year plan?
So actually, I had a 1 and 2 year plan in the beginning. It's probably similar to most employment opportunities at Henry Ford. When you come in as a junior faculty, you have it's basically a 2 year probationary period, and after the 2 years, your contract is sort of renewed on a yearly basis. So my plan going in was to determine whether or not this is the right fit for me. And so my first 2 years was essentially that.
And that was the fit, meaning clinical practice, or was it teaching, research? What was it that you were looking for? Did you want to do it all?
So in the beginning, it was clinical practice was the first. I didn't go into my position with a specific research idea in mind. I knew from my training, you know, spending time at University of Michigan, and my fellowship, and sort of the network that I had started building, that I had the tools to move into a research career or whatever track that I decided. But I didn't decide that until probably my third year in. So my third year in, I was fortunate to be selected to be the vice chair of the department. I developed a clinical interest based on the patient population that was there. And again, I think one of the biggest things that I would say and that I try to do is really look for a need, an opportunity, and a lot of times it can be better if it's an unmet need, and maybe everybody isn't focusing on it. You know, we look at our specialty, or even in general, we look at cancer research as an example. There's a lot of people doing it, so it can make it difficult to sort of blaze your own trail. So I was just at the right place at the right time with I had a few patients that started coming to me with keloids, and I started with a clinical question, and we were all taught the incidence of keloids and at-risk patients. And in Detroit, you know, it's the majority African-American population right around the hospital. And I noticed that, you know, the 15-20% of patients were not presenting with keloids after having incisions in the head and neck. So start off with like a clinical question. You know, like I said, Henry Ford has a great infrastructure because of the integrated health system that they have. I was able to do a quick epidemiology search and published a paper looking at the incidence of keloids in the head and neck after surgery. We had a researcher, her name was Maria Warsham, who just happened to have some space in a methylation array, and I called her up, and I didn't know it at the time, but I called her up and basically, you know, asked her the sort of essential clinician research question. You know, we need to do better. What can we do to better understand this disease, this condition, and how can we use the bench to help us? And she said, well, look, if you can give me as many samples as you can get by this date, we can put them in this array, and you know, we'll look at it from the epigenetic perspective. And that was sort of a parallel advance in my career from being an administrator to start a research a trajectory in my career. And so after that, the third year, then I developed a five-year plan. And my five-year plan was to try to get funding for research and look for the opportunity. I've always wanted to get my MBA, and so I wanted to look at opportunity to get my MBA. And I was fortunate to after the second try, Henry Ford has a sort of internal K award, which is a three-year, 50% protected time for research. And for our department, I was the first person in our department to get that award. And during that period of time, I wanted to be as efficient with my time as possible. So I enrolled in an executive MBA program during that three-year period to help if, you know, my thinking was if my trajectory is going to move forward in administrative, the MBA would help me and I could simultaneously work on developing a research career.
So, truly impressive. You know, the advice I usually give my mentees is find a niche, just like you said, find an unmet need, and then either be first to market or be loudest to market, right? So, keloids has been around for a long, long time. You can't be first to market with keloids, but you were loud to market. You found a way to actually look at it from the bench, a basic science standpoint. And I think that's what differentiates you and gives you that niche and really propose your research and your academic name. So these are all great examples for young residents and young junior faculty as to how they move their career forward. Let's go back to that MBA a little bit. Because I think a lot of aspiring academicians think the way you think. Looking back on it, has it helped you get to where you want to go?
Well, so as I, you know, as I continue to move in both avenues in my career, research and administratively, I think that it gives you a different perspective. Naturally, in our training as physicians, we're trained to think of one patient at a time. And when you look at economics, I mean, economics is, you know, there's microeconomics and there's macroeconomics. And the focus now is really on macroeconomics, you know, population health, you know, the big buzzword, another big buzzword in healthcare is number of lives covered. And this is all about fundamental business principles. And, you know, and a lot of this is based on, you know, economy and scale. And so at least for me, having an MBA, I sometimes have to slow down and chains, hats, and really give the perspective or try to take the perspective of how do you maximize what is essentially a limited resource. And so when you look at what fundamentals of economics is basically how do you maximize a resource to get the most potential out. And that, you know, that goes, it doesn't just apply to administration and the sort of the delivery of healthcare. I think when you look at research, I think one of the biggest shortcomings that physicians have, and it's not our fault, it's just one of the disadvantages of the training that we traditionally had, is that we don't really appreciate the value of the resources that we have. And so, in my short research career, I've had the fortune to learn from negotiating some material transfer agreements and some non-disclosure agreements for some of the research that resources that I've developed over the 5 or 6 years. And when you negotiate with a company and they're willing to pay you $100,000 or $200,000 for either some tangible resources or some non-tangible resources, such as data, for example, you realize what the value is. And I think that as physicians, clinicians, we sort ourselves up short, and we don't really understand the value. And having a MBA gives you a different perspective of what the resources that you have, what they are truly worth.
Best advice you got for your career, and then what advice would you give to someone who's just starting out?
The best advice that I've gotten for my careers, I think one of the first things you have to find something that you're passionate about. If you're passionate about it, I mean, it's sort of a cliche, but if you're passionate about it, then it'll make it easier for you to make it easier for you to strive to be good at it, and to help you weather the ups and downs. The second thing I would say is not to underestimate the importance of developing a network. I think a network is very, very important, and not just a network in the health, in medicine. I think you need to have a network outside of medicine. And a network, I think people instinctively would think a network is developing, identifying mentors. I think mentors are probably harder and fewer to come by. Just because somebody's in your network doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a mentor, that they will be a good mentor for you. So I think mentors are an essential part of the network that you should develop, and you should have a mentor in the field that you're in, and you should have a mentor.